5 UTC right after the international news.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. My opening serve is Australian Open tennis. Japanese star Naomi Osaka will play the American Jennifer Brady in Saturday's women's singles final in Melbourne. Osaka eliminated Serena Williams Thursday, 6-3 and 6-4, while Brady beat the Czech Karolina Mukova in three sets, 6-4, 3-6, and 6-4. Naomi Osaka says she had some jitters at the start against Serena Williams, maybe the greatest female player of all time.
Yeah, I was definitely really nervous. And I know it's very intimidating to serve for the first game and see her on the other side of the net. So for me, I felt like I just started making way too much unforced errors because I was worried about what she would do if I were to hit a softball. But yeah, I think when it was like 2-0, I was just telling myself to control what I can control and try to play within myself instead of thinking about what she would do or anything like that.
Naomi Osaka lifted the trophy in Melbourne 2 years ago. It was the second of her three major titles. Naomi compares how she is feeling now with 2019.
Like 2 years ago or something, I felt like my goal was to make history, to like somehow at least have one thing that I was able to do right. So I would say I wanted to be the first Japanese person to win a slam. I think that was my goal. And then there was more things to do. So for the me right now, of course, it's nice to see your name in a trophy or your name on a wall. But I think bigger than that, I feel like I'm playing with a different purpose for this trip.
Meanwhile, there are question marks about 39-year-old Serena Williams and her tennis future after her loss to Naomi Osaka. Serena gave the crowd inside the Rod Laver Arena a long wave goodbye with her hand on her heart following her semifinal defeat. Serena had once again come up short in her 10th attempt to equal Margaret Court's record of 24 major trophies. At the post-match news conference, Serena was asked if this was her farewell, and she became tearful during the follow-up question by Craig Gabriel. Let's listen in now.
I don't know. If I ever say farewell, I wouldn't tell anyone. So,
so. What are you saying about the unforced errors through the match? Considering how well you've played to get to this stage, what do you feel caused that? Or was it just one of those bad days at the office?
I don't know. I'm done.
An emotional Serena Williams with a few tears after her loss Thursday to Naomi Osaka in the semifinals of the Australian Open. Jennifer Brady reached her first Grand Slam final with her three-set victory over Karolina Mukova, and Brady believes she belongs in the title match.
I wouldn't say I'm in disbelief. I've definitely been practicing hard. I think I've earned the right to be sitting here, to be playing in a final, in a Grand Slam final on Saturday. Most definitely. I've put in a lot of work, and I just think it's crazy to believe.
Jennifer Brady lost in three sets to Naomi Osaka in the semifinals of last year's U.S. Open in New York. Brady was asked if she'll think about that match in Saturday's final.
Yes and no. Yes, I think I can take away the positives from that match and learn maybe what I did wrong that, you know, I wasn't able to come away with the result. But also no, because I don't want to compare matches or compare performances and try to replicate that because every match is different.
That's American Jennifer Brady, who will play Japan's Naomi Osaka on Saturday in the women's singles final at the Australian Open in Melbourne. On the men's side in Melbourne, world number one Novak Djokovic stayed on course for a record-extending ninth Australian Open trophy. Djokovic easily reached the final, beating the Russian qualifier Aslan Karatsev 6-3, 6-4, and 6-2.
I'm just very pleased with the performance. It came at the right time before last match in the Grand Slam. You know, couldn't be a better timing for me to play my best tennis. But being in this situation before for many times, I think helps kind of gather all the necessary elements for me to peak at the right time, which is happening again, which I'm very obviously happy about. It contributes to more confidence, you know, prior to coming into the finals, knowing that I never lost in finals or semifinals. It just makes me feel more comfortable being on the court. But each year is different, although it does have a mental effect on me, maybe on my opponents, I don't know. But on me, it has definitely a positive effect. It's not a decisive factor in the way the match is going to go forward because, as I said, each year is different. Surface is also different. Play against also different opponents. So that's not going to be a decisive factor, I think, on Sunday.
Djokovic will play the winner of the other semifinal between Russia's Daniil Medvedev and Stefanos Tsitsipas of Greece.
Hi, I'm Francis Tiafo. You're listening to Sunnyside of Sports on Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In National Basketball Association news, the league's hottest team, the Utah Jazz, posted their ninth consecutive victory Wednesday night. The Jazz got a big game from their big French center, Rudy Gobert. The AP's Mark Myers reports.
Rudy Gobert was a force on both ends of the court as the Jazz rolled over the Clippers 114-96 for its ninth straight win.
Second half, we picked it up and by being more aggressive defensively, we became more aggressive offensively, and we shared the ball and we were able to, you know, get great shots at the free throw line, the threes, and the rim.
The seven-footer scored 23 points, pulled in 20 rebounds, and drew accolades after the game from his coach, Quinn Snyder.
There's games where, you know, the box score doesn't show the things that he does. Tonight it did. You know, he's not trying to prove anything. He's just playing, and he's just competing. You know, he can lift you when he's doing that, particularly on the defensive end.
And thanks to Mark Myers for that report. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Washington Wizards also scored victories Wednesday night, a busy night in the NBA. Philadelphia's Cameroonian star Joel Embiid had an excellent all-around performance as we hear now from the AP's Dave Ferry.
Joel Embiid had 31 points, 11 rebounds, and 9 assists to guide the Sixers to a 118-113 win over the Rockets.
We had a stretch where at least 6 possessions, you know, where we had nothing going on, and they just came back down the other hand and just started making shots. We just got to learn how to close games.
Seth Curry scored 25 points, and Tobias Harris added 24 for the Eastern Conference-leading 76ers, who were without Ben Simmons due to illness. The Sixers led by 29 points in the second half and sent Houston to its 7th consecutive loss. John Wall scored 28 points for the shorthanded Rockets, who played without injured starters P.J. Tucker and Victor Oladipo. Wall scored 8 straight to pull the Rockets within 110-107. Bradley Beal's 2 free throws with 1/10 of a second remaining gave the Wizards their 3rd straight win, 130-128 over the Nuggets.
We're going into the second half, you know, we're winning. All of a sudden they make their run, you know, it gets a little crazy and nerve-wracking at the end, but I think it just shows our kind of poise and our growth.
Davis Bertans scored a career high with 35 points, while Russell Westbrook had a triple-double with 12 points, 13 rebounds, and 12 assists. Nuggets guard Jamal Murray poured in 35 points, including Denver's final 11. He nailed a three-pointer that tied it at 128 with 2.1 seconds left. Nikola Jokic scored 33 points in the Nuggets' second loss in as many nights. I'm Dave Ferry.
Yo, 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 sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carollo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evelyn. In African men's basketball, Nigeria beat South Sudan Wednesday 75-70 in Monastir, Tunisia, to become the first team to qualify for this year's AfroBasket. AfroBasket 2021 is scheduled from August 24th to September 5th in Rwanda. For reaction to Nigeria's victory, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the assistant coach of Nigeria's national men's basketball team, Ogo Odaudu.
It's a great thing that Nigeria has finally qualified. We expected nothing less. We knew we were going to qualify for the Cup of Nations. But the South Sudan game, I knew right from the onset, was not going to be easy. They are a rising force in Nigerian basketball. Give them a year or two and they'll be a force to reckon with when you mention basketball in Africa. I expected that the game was going to be very tough, and Nigeria did not have much time to practice before the game. It was like their first practice session. The game itself was their first practice session. So I think they really did good and can only get better going forward.
Some players made their debut for Nigeria in the match against South Sudan. What's your assessment of such players?
A lot of new players made their debut, and I think they all stepped up. It just goes to show the kind of class that Nigeria has when it comes to basketball. We can pick a different 12 at any point in time, and they'll go and make their mark. Nigeria is blessed with talent, and we harness it. We are going to go a long way in the Olympics.
Do you see more foreign-based players opting to play for Nigeria in future tournaments?
Of course. Everybody's dream now is to go come and play for Nigeria. The Aminu brothers, Ike Diogu, Ben Uzo, and the rest have carved a niche for themselves. They've made Nigerian basketball so popular now that anybody who has any little bit of Nigerian blood in him wants to come home to represent the national team. So this is just the beginning. With the Olympics on the horizon, I'm sure that everybody will indicate their interest that they want to come and play for Nigeria.
That's Ogo Odaudu, the assistant coach of Nigeria's national men's basketball team, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporting greetings. This is Ogo Odaudu, head coach, Rivers Hoopers basketball team. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. That's Heather Maxwell, the host of the VOA's Music Time in Africa show. And here are a couple of fun facts about Heather. She's a former Peace Corps volunteer. And keeping things sporty, Heather enjoys surfing. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Olympic host country Japan launched its coronavirus vaccination campaign Wednesday ahead of the upcoming Tokyo Games. VOA's Gwen Uten has more details for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Japan began their vaccination campaign months after the first shots were administered around the world, and the late rollout has raised some concerns about the country's readiness to host the upcoming Tokyo Olympics in July. This week, officials from the IOC, the International Paralympic Committee, and Tokyo 2020 held a joint meeting to discuss COVID-19 countermeasures for the upcoming games. And at a Wednesday news conference, IPC Communications Officer Greg Spence said he believes Japan's vaccine rollout will reach enough people to save the already delayed Olympic and Paralympic Games.
I think it's encouraging that today the vaccination started in Japan. I think this now brings to 81 the number of countries that are rolling out vaccination programs. And I think that means there's 180 million doses administered so far, 6 billion a day roughly, which means by games time at least a billion people will have been vaccinated around the world. So that's good progress. And that can only be seen as a positive when it comes to games preparations.
It's expected to take 1 year for the vaccine to reach the entire 126 million population in Japan. And Tokyo 2020 Game Delivery Officer Hadimasa Nakamura said, while Japan might not finish all planned vaccines by this summer, he hopes people will be safer by the start of the games. Meanwhile, Manchester City Football Club manager Pep Guardiola is worried about a spike in new coronavirus cases when players travel for international duty at the end of March. Guardiola says in order to beat the virus, it's best to stay home.
The only way to be protected about this virus is to stay at home and don't move, and social distance, and not contacts, and no travels. And now the people are going to travel. The players are going to the national teams, and it's difficult after to be controlled. So I think something is going to rise, unfortunately. I would like to guess it's not going to happen, but for experience, it happened in two waves or three waves already in the worldwide. So if you move, you take a risk to be contaminated again, to get the virus again.
Guardiola spoke the day before his 3-1 victory against Everton, a game that was postponed last December due to the coronavirus. During that period, many matches in the Premier League were suspended because of the pandemic, and Guardiola warns next month's international break could cause new infections that have just been brought under control.
The reason why there was a lot of cases in the Premier League and now there's no cases is because the people don't move. Home training center, game home. No more than that. So all the restaurants are closed. Just to go to buy the essential food, and the rest is if here we are in the bubble. Every 2 days we are tested, and the moment you take a planes and and move in other places, I don't know. Everything can happen.
A variant of the coronavirus that first emerged in the UK has been identified in over 80 countries. And while reports say England has experienced a strong decline in COVID-19 infections since January, virus levels are still high. And Guardiola believes clubs and football associations should stay on high alert.
In Britain and in UK, the statistics, every night I open the BBC and I saw the cases and I saw how many people daily is vaccinated, and I'm really impressed. It's getting much better. But is there. When we relax a little bit, it's coming back again. So that's why I think until springtime or summertime, we have to be careful.
On Monday, the Premier League released a statement that said of the more than 2,900 players and club staff who were tested last week, only two positive cases were confirmed, the same number as the week prior, and so far the lowest results of the season. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Well, one of our super stories this month on the Sunny Side of Sports was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning the 55th Super Bowl of American style football. Let's listen in again to Dan Friedel's postgame report.
Super Bowl 55 looked very similar to Super Bowls in the recent past on Sunday. Quarterback Tom Brady was out on the field once again tossing touchdown passes to his favorite receiver, Rob Gronkowski. The only difference? This time, they were doing it for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers instead of the New England Patriots. Brady won his fifth Super Bowl MVP award as he threw three touchdown passes in his 10th Super Bowl, leading the Buccaneers to a surprising blowout win, 31-9 over the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. It's Brady's seventh Super Bowl victory. He had won six since 2002 with the New England Patriots. It was his first for Tampa Bay. For those soccer fans out there, Tampa Bay's owner also owns Manchester United. We first saw Brady as a fresh-faced young man who helped the New England Patriots, who were then the underdogs against the defending champion St. Louis Rams in that 2002 game. Brady became the oldest player in a Super Bowl on Sunday, playing at 43, almost two decades after he played in his first one. Brady and the Buccaneers got off to a good start against the Chiefs, whose offense was expected to be the star of the game. Patrick Mahomes is perhaps the game's best young quarterback. He's the leader of the Chiefs, and they have one of the game's best tight ends, Travis Kelce, and one of the game's most exciting players, wide receiver Tyreek Hill. And the trio put together an outstanding season, once again making the Super Bowl as the AFC's best team. Now, neither team had lost in a couple of months, but only one could finish the season on an undefeated streak, and that was the Buccaneers. Tampa played three of the best quarterbacks in the recent history of the NFL in the Super Bowl and the playoffs. Brady was asked how his team's defense did so well against Mahomes, and future Hall of Famers Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints and Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers.
They stepped up to the challenge, and, you know, you go up against a guy like Pat, incredible player, and Aaron, MVP, 2 weeks ago, they played incredible, and then Drew, they played great. They stepped up, they rose to the occasion, and we needed it because playing extremely talented offenses, but just so happy we all came to play tonight.
That's Super Bowl 55 champion Tom Brady of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Sonny, we talked about Tampa defensive lineman Ndamukong Suh, who is the son of African parents. Suh compiled 1.5 sacks of Mahomes in the Super Bowl. It's his first victory in the big game in his long career. Tampa's coach is Bruce Arians, who had been known as an outstanding assistant coach, but not a successful head coach. He came to the Buccaneers after taking 1 year off, and then after a tough first season, managed to entice Brady, who has 1 year remaining on a two-year contract. The Bucs got their three Super Bowl touchdown scorers just this year: Gronkowski, running back Leonard Fournette, and wide receiver Antonio Brown. Arians worked with defensive coach Todd Bowles and offensive coach Byron Leftwich to create a well-rounded team suited for the playoffs. Arians is the oldest coach to ever win a Super Bowl at 68.
We protected the football. We had great protection. We found a couple guys like Antonio and Gronk. Both their touchdowns were
more improv plays, and just did a great job. Great line, great tight ends. Everybody just did a hell of a job. Team effort.
His mother, 95-year-old Kay Arians, was there to watch it in person, part of a socially distanced 25,000-person crowd during the coronavirus pandemic. The Super Bowl was the first ever to be played in the home stadium of one of the teams. Arians said it was nice to have the morning of the biggest night of his career at home in Tampa.
I had a great morning this morning playing with my 2-year-old grandson out in the backyard and pushing him on the swing, and then came to the game. So it, that's what makes this all so gratifying, is to be able to share it with our family.
That's Bruce Arians, the head coach of the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I'm Dan Friedel for the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Dan. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers celebrated their Super Bowl title with a boat parade. Thousands of fans lined the Hillsborough River near downtown Tampa, Florida. At one point during the parade, Tampa Bay's star quarterback, Tom Brady, was captured on video tossing the Super Bowl's Lombardi trophy from his boat across the water to a shirtless Rob Gronkowski in another boat. That brought wild cheers from fans and players. Brady threw 2 touchdown passes to Gronkowski during the Super Bowl, and the two players connected numerous times when they played for the New England Patriots. Meanwhile, Sunday's Super Bowl drew an audience of more than 96 million television viewers here in the United States, as we hear now from the AP's Oscar Wells Gabriel.
96.4 million viewers. That is how many people checked out the big game on Sunday. But CBS is reporting that the big story of the game isn't how many people watch, but how they watched. The number includes a record digital audience. The network says the title match was the most live-streamed NFL game ever, averaging 5.7 million viewers per minute. That is up 65% from last year. This year's Super Bowl is also the first NFL game to deliver more than 1 billion total streaming minutes. The most watched Super Bowl ever was in 2015. The matchup then between the New England Patriots and Seattle Seahawks drew 114.4 million viewers. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Now let's go to Ivory Coast, where more and more girls and women are playing rugby. In this report by Emma Camara, VOA's Carol Gunsberg tells us how girls are tackling this rough and tumble sport.
As a girl, Damon Sanatha dreamed of playing rugby professionally, but didn't have the money or access to training. Determined that no other girls should be kept from the game, 4 years ago she began coaching Sibroco, a women's team in Bingerville. Sanatha brought the team to play at the National Institute for Youth and Sports in Markori, a college in suburban Abidjan.
I was a former player. I stayed on staff to supervise the girls. I would like the sisters to go as far as possible, ensure that there is a place for girls in this sport.
Rugby can be a rough contact sport. But 15-year-old Berta Assista, who has a different coach, is fine with that.
I started rugby thanks to my friend. She invited me to come and watch how it is played. On the second day, I put on athletic clothes to train a little. Since that day, I have loved rugby.
Isabel Yeboa, secretary of the Ivorian Rugby Federation's Women's Commission, says it's about time women players are getting recognized.
Girls have been training with clubs for a very long time.
The Rugby Federation organizes an annual tournament among clubs. It's also a showcase to find promising players who can go on to play for the national team.
So we are doing a championship to select the good female players, let them form a team, and also participate in international competitions.
What's clear is that many girls who want to play rugby now can get the chance. Of 21 official clubs in Ivory Coast, more than half are for females. For Mama Camara in Markori, Côte d'Ivoire, Carol Gunsberg, VOA News.
February 18th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side.